This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us here on The Morning Run. Today is Thursday, 21st of March, and I'm Julian, joined by my colleagues Lynn Mark as well as Sharitz Abdullah. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Julian.
And today is International Day for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, as well as World Poetry Day.
Wow, that's two fairly different things to celebrate, but ultimately... Yeah.
Maybe they need each other.
That's true.
Yeah, there should be a poem about elimination of racial discrimination. Yeah.
Do you got one, Sharitz? Have you written one
not
for us?
Racial discrimination.
Oh, so no, you have written poetry then?
No, I haven't. I don't know how to write poetry, sadly. I really don't.
Neither do I. I'm in that group as well. Lynn?
No, I thought
We're all looking at you.
Yeah, you seem like a person that could write poetry.
Well, I do have a poetry fact for the two of you for today.
Okay, let's hear it.
So in the Guinness World Records, apparently the most prolific poet in the English language is a man called John Bradburn. And he wrote 170,000 lines of poetry in his life. That was, so between 1920s and 1979.
That's twice. Are they good, though? Well, I mean, anyone can whip up something that rhymes, right?
I mean, poetry is subjective.
True,
right?
True.
It's, yeah. Beauty's in the eye of the beholder and all that. But it's actually more than twice, I think it's more than twice the amount that Shakespeare wrote. It's quite impressive.
Right. Yeah, it's quite impressive, but I want to see him in theatre and before I make my decision on that. I think the jury is still out on that. I'm being a little bit harsh, aren't I?
Well, I do have a poetry, a poem here. Ooh. But I think it's too long. I mean, but it's a very angry one as well. But it could get me hired by Lim Guan Eng as his political secretary.
Really? What's this
about
one?
Tax, man.
About tax.
Okay.
Yeah, it's about tax.
How long is this?
Yeah, it's going to be long. So,
just give us a preview, two lines.
So we're talking about. This is a tax poem, okay? So this is rough. I mean, we're talking about tax.
You're already
okay,
filling us with
let's
suspense
do it. Let's
and excitement.
Do it, huh? So it says, tax his land, tax his bed, tax the tablet at which he's fed. Tax his tractor, tax his mule, teach him taxes are the rule. Tax his work, tax his pay. He works of peanuts anyway. Have you guys?
I think
had
we should.
Tax?
I think for this reason we should get rid of the World Poetry Day.
No. I think we should post it on Twitter.
Yeah, we should
share this. Share this.
It's
gem
more
that
than 140 characters.
But let's just go to the end. Yeah. So it goes taxing to your, tax his cigar, tax his tears, and tax his cars, and at the end of it. Then Texas coffin, Texas grave, Texas sword in which he's laid.
Wow.
Okay. Put these words upon his tomb, Texas drove me to my doom. And when he's gone, do not relax, it's time to apply the inheritance tax.
Thank you. Thank you, Sharitz.
Right? You're welcome.
What a wonderful start to the day.
Exactly. To World Poetry Day.
Tax. All right.
Okay, what have we got for today? On that note,
we've got another extremely cheerful discussion, which is on meritocracy. So basically, we're going to be asking, does it really exist?
Interesting.
And yesterday, someone spoke about the M word, the marijuana word, in Selangor State Assembly. And that's very interesting. And the question is, are we more open to, the discussion of marijuana now?
Yeah. Not open to marijuana itself, open to talk of marijuana.
Yeah,
right?
Talk about marijuana.
Talk of ganja. Okay. We're also going to talk about, like a happier tone, right? How to be happy without pills. And if you have anything to say to us, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. And we'll be back with those discussions, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Penny Lane by The Beatles, and before that, I'm Still Standing by Elton John. You're with The Morning Run, Julian, Lynn and Sharitz here with you. Now, awareness about the prevalence of mental illness is on the rise. Yesterday, we spoke about how millennials are getting burnt out, and I'm sure many of us are very stressed out at work as well. Well, apparently, you can eat yourself to happiness. Felicia Jacker is the head of Food and Mood Centre at Deakin University in Australia, and she's also the president of the International Society for Nutrition nutritional psychiatry, and she is researching on the link between diet and mental health. And she says that eating vegetables, fruits, fish, whole grains, and moderate amounts of red meat will make you happy as compared to eating burgers, pizzas, chips, and so on. And this is a good deal for us, right? Because we are a nation that loves eating.
But what about nasi lemak? Where does that fall on the scale?
That's a healthy meal, right?
Exactly. It has carbs, it has protein.
Very balanced.
Yeah, very balanced.
A couple of slices of cucumbers, so you've got your roughage as well.
You can put a whole piece of cucumber. I mean,
anchovies are very healthy.
Ikan bilis is very healthy, isn't it? So, it's not just about living longer. I think statistics are saying that we as humans are living much longer anyways. But I guess it's not just about that. It's also about having a healthy life and also being happy throughout that lifespan that you have, isn't it?
Yeah, I think there was also this this recent development from Scotland, right? So doctors there are now actually prescribing a walk in nature as one of the cures. Well, we'll say cures. One of the things that could mitigate depression, anxiety, mental health issues. I think that sounds fantastic as well. Because if you've ever been to Scotland, it's a beautiful country.
Absolutely.
And I can imagine, you know, actually having a doctor's prescription to go and walk around will help lift your spirits.
Yeah, actually, you don't need to go that far. We have a park nearby here in Taman Tun, like actually a forest or a jungle. And we've got the lake gardens. It's beautiful. But this is the first program of its kind in the UK. And apparently 90 minutes spent outside will decrease activity in the part of your brain that is associated to depression. And this kind of prescription, right? This is an official prescription by a doctor. It has the ability to reduce blood pressure, anxieties, ADHD, and so on. So my takeaway from this is that instead of popping pills, you can eat food and walk in nature. Like, I think that's really awesome.
Yeah, it can stimulate kind of, it's almost like a natural stimulation of your serotonin levels.
Yeah, but besides being, you know, food making us healthy and then at the same time how it can increase your lifespan. So I just don't think that we, you know, just focus, just food and also prescription of going outdoors is the only factor that would determine how happy you are. And I think
What else?
Well, for an example, we look at animals. Some pets, they live beyond the age, and you know, and the reason being is because of the owners that they have. You know, they
get love, is it?
Yeah, and also spouses. You know, you've heard the stories where there's, you know, there are spouses out there that would live as long as, you know, their better half. And as one of them passes on, the other one would, not long after, they'll pass on as well. Where I'm getting at here is that, you know, we're talking about sense of purpose sometimes. What makes
that's
us
true.
Being part of a community.
Being part of the community. And so it's just that these days we are so preoccupied with work. We're just thinking about work. And then including debt as well. Just sort of makes us live longer. But it's important that what we put in our mouth.
Exactly. Also, Finland has become 2 years running, the world's happiest country. And over there, they have a strong social safety net as well as a high-quality education system. I guess those things work as well. And to that, I will add getting an insurance policy. Right, I'm boring. Okay, so you can buy peace of mind with a very cheap, term policy. And I'm ruining this World Poetry Day with my insurance suggestion.
It's a practical suggestion, right?
Yes.
It's a realistic solution to these worries in the future, because removing that source of worry will help you achieve kind of a more peaceful, serene sort of outlook. And that's one of the things that Finland has, because obviously Finland is, like other Nordic countries, a welfare state.
Correct.
So they have a lot of social support for their people built into the government. And one of the things from kind of the news reports on this is that Finnish society has been built in such a way that people are supported but still feel like they have control of their lives. So it's finding that balance between support and independence.
Okay, coming up next, we'll talk about meritocracy, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Little Uneasy by Phaser Days. Thanks for joining us on The Morning Run. Julian Lin and Cher is here with you. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio for anything that, any opinion and any comments that you want to say to us. Now, we all like the idea of meritocracy. If you work hard, you'll get some corresponding rewards in life. This article from Fast Companies argues differently. It says that while a lot of people, about 84% in the UK, believe that the world is meritocratic, factors like your looks, your economic position and education, and even luck still influence decisions like whether you get that cushy job or not. So this is, turning the idea of meritocracy on its head.
It is. And more than that, this is quite an interesting article because it argues that meritocracy or kind of espousing the idea of meritocracy can actually even foster selfish behavior. So it highlighted this psychological study, which they call the ultimatum game. So one player is given a sum of money and told to propose a division between him and someone else or other people. And the people who have been led to believe that they have more skill subsequently take a larger share because they believe that they are entitled to it.
Yeah. So meritocracy is it's a hot-button topic here, isn't it, in Malaysia, especially when we have a lot of affirmative action policies.
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, which...
And the university quota systems as well.
University quotas, yeah. Businesses and so on. So government has a stand on this. I mean, I was reading on the side, Dr. Mahathir last year, actually he has no plan to implement a full meritocracy system because he believes that the system, if applied across the board, would see the poor remaining poor and the rich becoming more rich, which I think...
which is a policy that you can adjust through a redistributive tax system, right? It's okay, I think, to allow people who have the ability to do business and make a lot of money contributing to the economy, share the wealth a bit through a taxation system. So I don't think that's a bad idea.
I also don't think affirmative action is necessarily a bad thing, so long as it is coupled with government initiatives to help them build the skill and it's not just essentially a handout, right? Because if you are just giving them approvals, if you're giving them the quotas, then what do you learn from it? You don't have the corresponding skills and you come out with a little bit less than the people who...
So you're saying that affirmative action is not actually mutually exclusive with meritocracy?
I don't think it necessarily has to be because I do agree with this in the sense that I think that meritocracy is an ideal. It's not a reality. Factors like how much money you have, privilege, influence your starting point. So I think the government does have that responsibility to help ensure that people start from the same level.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily think that affirmative action alone can give that.
It's about giving
that level playing field, isn't it? But the problem with the affirmative action, I think as we all know it, a lot of us know it, wasn't really about the spirit of the affirmative action. It's also the abuse of it, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yes.
So now we are talking about sort of a new affirmative action. I mean, there's a focus, affirmative action, but specifically, well, supposed to be non-racial based, but rather than the need based, isn't it? And again... Same issue could even crop up again. I mean, we're talking about it can still be abused somewhat.
Yeah, and like you said, because the abuse that came in, I feel like it's because affirmative action policies kind of at some point got crossed with politics. That's where the government's continued affirmative action policies without looking to the long term. It was all in the short term focused on elections.
So do you think this kind of idea that meritocracy is not real will give fodder to politicians and say, there you go, this is what I've been saying all along? I think you guys are right. I agree with that the two can coexist, affirmative action and meritocracy. Like sports, for example, right? If you did not have meritocracy in sports, then you wouldn't come up with champions like Nicole David and, in badminton, we got, all the badminton greats in Malaysia. You can't say that, these are areas that we shouldn't have meritocracy, right? But, I mean, the economy itself, especially the social economy, is not a game. And therefore, you got to tread carefully with ideas like meritocracy.
It just sounds like it's more of the psychological side of things, isn't it? I mean, it's just if you approach things, you think that you the success that you have is based on your own effort, then, like you said, it would sort of make you a bit more selfish in some ways. But if you think it's luck that you were born by this parent and circumstances gives you the reason to be that way, so it changes things, I guess.
Okay, we're coming up to the 6:30 news, and here's Brilliant Disguise by Bruce Springsteen. Thank you very much. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Stoned Love by The Supremes. You're with The Morning Run. Julian Lin and Charit's here with you. There are a lot of studies on the medical benefits of marijuana. Apart from the Netherlands, Canada has also legalized marijuana for medical purposes last year. Thailand is also set to become the first ASEAN country to legalize medical marijuana. And on that note, we have Jeram Assemblyman Mohammad Shahid Rosli, who wants Selangor to be the biggest producer of marijuana in the world.
Yeah, so we're looking at, so what he's saying is that marijuana could bring in big yields in comparison. Well, he placed palm oil as a comparison, for an example, in a, you know, half an acre land, it could produce about 9 million ringgit a year in comparison to about 3,000 ringgit if you were to cultivate oil palm.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. I was just listening to the Teresa Kok podcast yesterday with Melissa Idris, and she says 4,000 tons per acre, or 4 million tons per acre compared to 1 million tons for other, you know, other oils. And marijuana, I guess this guy is translating it to dollars and cents, right? So,
just a correction, not acres, but hectares.
Hectares, yeah.
Hectares, okay. Yeah, I'm kind of curious as to where he got the idea, because it kind of seems a little bit out of left field. I mean, we don't really have a lot of conversations going about marijuana here in Malaysia, aside from, I think, the case of Dr. Ganja a few like last year.
That's right.
And that, of course, hasn't really ended well. I think he's still facing the death penalty for charges of trafficking CBD oil.
Yeah.
But there has been some traction with regards to that. I mean, several politicians have spoken out. For example, Nurul Izzah. Now, she she spoke against calling for the courts to be, you know, to be a bit more lenient, trying to drop death penalty on Dr. Ganja, for example. So, you know, to say, I think there has been more conversation about this, especially with the medical benefits that marijuana could give. We're talking about, there's been a lot of studies, for example, on patients that have cerebral palsy or autism, where they benefit from cannabis oil, where it reduces the symptoms a bit, the condition that, you know, these patients go through, really.
Yeah, I think this is not about recreational marijuana, right? Mm-hmm. This is just about medical marijuana, which I think the experts would take out the psychotropic effects and just use it for medical purposes. Like if you're cancer, apparently this helps. So don't jump, don't reach for the skies because you think that you can start smoking marijuana if this is going to be legalized. But I guess people are going to be worried about leakages out in the system where you can't actually get something to smoke up.
Yeah, and I guess the argument would also be that it's a kind of legalizing it even for medical purposes could be seen as a gateway into allowing a flood of drugs or marijuana into our society as a whole. And of course, you know, there's no guarantee that if you buy medical marijuana that people will not necessarily sell it on.
Yeah, and I think that a lot has been said about the dangers of over-smoking marijuana, right? And I think that the people who's going to be really up in arms with this are the tobacco as well as brewers, because where do you draw the line? Because you can go really crazy with alcohol as well and cigarettes as well. Cigarettes kill as well. So where does smoking marijuana come in, right? Where do you actually draw the line on that? Because if you take a little bit, then is it a sacrifice that is good enough for the medical benefits?
But then there aren't any medical benefits to smoking either. I mean, we are long past
that's
the
what
days
I'm saying.
When
that, yeah. That's what I'm saying. That's totally zero benefits okay. from smoking. But it's legal, and alcohol sure. as well is legal, and people, you know, people can have too much on that. But if you want to like just have a little bit of leakage, right, where people actually use marijuana recreationally, but for the bigger purpose of the medical benefits, then that might not be a bad idea. Okay, we'll be coming back with more discussions after this. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Do You Realize by The Flaming Lips. This is The Morning Run, Julian, Lynn and Sharitz here with you. Thanks for the tweets and the WhatsApp messages. We got something, right, Sharitz?
Yeah, we do. So we got a WhatsApp message from KY Ho. So he's saying that it's a mistake not to adopt meritocratic practices. A meritocracy is competition, and without competition, you will not get the best outcome. Now, not to mention the right outcome. Meritocracy is not contradictory to helping the poor. You need the best and right policies to help the poor. Even amongst the poor, you need them to compete. If not, you're teaching the poor to makan gaji buta. A perfect world without meritocracy edges towards Marxism and also Engels' idea of society. So do we want that?
Yeah, this is a discussion of capitalism versus socialism.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, and it's not always a clear answer. Capitalism is not an answer to the world's problems either.
No.
Witness all the climate problems that we have, inequality and poverty that exists in the world today.
Yep. And while there's nothing inherently wrong with the socialist ideas, but it's what happens when they're enforced and the kind of potential for government dictatorships that arise
Absolutely.
From it.
Absolutely. Which exists in the capitalistic world as well. We
exactly.
have abusive governments, abusive and very corrupt
just
governments as well.
People are horrible.
Yeah, and, you know, it's basically simple, just giving a helping hand to those who need it, right? And in that vein, Jacinda Ardern, the New Zealand Prime Minister, has been praised a lot for her empathetic approach to the Christchurch bombing. This contrasts to the almost a comical bravado of Trump. And in these circumstances, according to the Sydney Morning Herald, kindness is a radical act.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if you look at historically, the government's reactions to terrorist attacks tend to be very aggressive. So one of the examples given here in this article was from the US, George Bush. So Trump is very much an extreme, but George Bush also did this. You know, in the aftermath of 9/11, his rhetoric was, let's find out who did this, let's get them, let's, you know, take Osama bin Laden dead or alive. And that's very common. So that's what we're used to seeing. Jacinda Ardern has turned that on its head, because her reaction has been to basically say, I'm not even going to name the person who carried out this terrible act, because I don't want to make him notorious or a martyr amongst his own circles. What I want to do here is focus on the people, and they are New Zealanders, no matter their faith. So that's been a very different approach compared to what we've seen so far.
And she does that wearing a hijab.
She does,
she's
an atheist.
Yeah.
So she did that.
And
basically,
she greets them in Arabic as well, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. So it's it was more of a, like, she did it because it was kind of the respectful thing to do, as opposed to thinking about the optics of it.
Yeah, we also see a lot of her, isn't it? I mean, amongst the Muslim community in the NZ, I mean, in the New Zealand, I mean, she has been in every single functions that, you know, the Muslim community has organized. And there's definitely a lot of lessons to be, you know, that we could gather from her, especially how she, you know, as a majority in being, you know, the white community in New Zealand, how, you know, how she extends her empathy and kindness to the, you know, to the minorities. This is how it's supposed to be, isn't it?
You
earn respect not by, like you said, you know, fear-mongering and so forth, and, you know, going for retribution like how it is in some other countries, but instead just talking about them and just engaging them a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I think you want to make kindness kind of contagious. This is a way to get the other people who have very opposing views than yourselves just to see your view, right? And if you add fuel to the fire by attacking people, you might not achieve that objective.
Mm. The other thing she's doing that's quite interesting here is that she's starting a conversation about female leaders and how we perceive female leaders, right? So Jacinda Ardern she's kind of broken the mold a couple of times already in her premiership. First of all, she's young and she's female, and she was the first woman to give birth, she's the only second democratically elected leader to give birth while in office. She's very different from other female leaders like Angela Merkel, for example, or even Theresa May, because the accepted view of leadership tends to be very masculine. And so women leaders tend to adopt more masculine styles, so lowering their voices, coming across as more stern, more fierce and aggressive, rather than taking this empathetic, feminine, in air quotes, approach. So I think that's quite interesting, because what she could do here is, if she makes this more accepted in mainstream, is popularizing, or I guess making feminine behavior more acceptable in leadership.
Okay, we're coming up to the 7 a.m. news, and to take us there is About a Girl by Nirvana, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.